Today's program is brought to you by Bird Boutique. Bird is Brooklyn's first fashion destination, leading the fashion pack across the river since 1999. For more information, visit shopbird.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more. Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this show, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Cherry Bomb, coming to you live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Julia Tertian. Off the air, I write about food, and my favorite part about what I do is finding out the stories behind great recipes, restaurants, and more. On the air, I get to bring the pages of Cherry Bomb magazine to life by having these conversations with some of the most interesting women in the world of food, and today, one of the most interesting men as well. You can listen to the show live every Monday at 1 o'clock on heritageradionetwork.org or download it anytime on iTunes. On today's show, I'm so happy to have Erin McKenna, the celebrated baker and cookbook author who runs all things baby cakes. She's also the cover girl of the second issue of Cherry Bomb. And Brooks Headley, the celebrated pastry chef of Del Posto and author of a brand new cookbook called Fancy Desserts. Brooks was also the first man to write for Cherry Bomb in the third issue. So lots of a Cherry Bomb reunion of sorts. While Erin and Brooks work in very different areas of the sweet world, Erin's got the lockdown on all things gluten-free and vegan, and Brooks is a James Beard Award-winning pastry chef of a fine dining restaurant. I really do think they have a lot in common. The two of them are some of, if not the most innovative and successful people in desserts, but they're also both refreshingly unpretentious. There's no sugarcoating with either of them. It's my one cheesy line of the day. I'm so happy you guys are here.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
Yes, very cool.
And despite any subway confusion or anything, we've all made it. I want to start today by letting some people know about both of you, and then we're going to get into your day jobs and your books and everything. So, Erin, can you tell everyone where you're from and a little bit about the family you come from?
Yeah, I'm from Southern California, specifically Chula Vista, which is the most southern part of San Diego. It's like the border of Mexico.
Yeah, it's right there, right?
It's right there. Yes, and I have 11 brothers and sisters. I never went to TJ. Everyone always asked me if I started going to TJ in my teen years, but I was always, when you're living in Chula Vista, all you see is like everyone's getting thrown in jail all the time, like, you know, young kids. So I stayed out of trouble
Follow the rules. Chula Vista.
Yeah, I have 11 brothers and sisters, and then went to San Francisco a few years, and then came to New York in 2002.
Cool. And Brooks, where are you from?
I grew up in Baltimore.
Baltimore.
And I actually haven't really lived in New York that long at all, so.
How long is not that long?
About 7.5 years.
Okay. So. On your way to the decade. That's the New Yorker marker, right?
Oh, is that it?
Is that? Yeah. I was always wondering,
when do I get crowned?
Erin, when did baking come into your life? How'd you go from being an at-home baker to a bakery owner?
Well, so in maybe 2001, I was, it was suggested to me that I lay off wheat and gluten and dairy and soy because I was having all these stomach problems, like lifelong. And I did, and I became, I felt a lot better. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I was living in Los Angeles for a couple of years. And there, it was just, like, very progressive as far as weirdness with food. So I really blossomed there.
Find your people.
I think actually I was so strict. There actually is an eating disorder related to like being super like obsessed with being like organic and healthy and pesticide. Like your mind is reeling. I just remember living there and I was just like just freaking out about everything all the time. And then I moved to New York and obviously had to relax a little bit because, you know, things were a little bit behind. I was in fashion and unhappy. And I had a huge sweet tooth, so I'd just go home after work and start making cookies for myself, just because that's what I like to do, is bake and eat sweets. So, and I just had the idea for the bakery, and I just quit my job and decided to do it. And then we're like the weirdo bakery in the Lower East Side for many years. People were like, glutton-free. Everyone...
Gluten-free, it's diet. It's diet. I was like, okay.
That's so, I remember once you telling me a while ago that when you started the bakery with no previous bakery experience, it was made easier by the fact that you started without that experience or even a ton of money or anything, because you really had nothing to lose.
And yeah,
I've repeated that story to a lot of people. Aww. I'm giving you credit. But I think there's like this big idea that in order to succeed and do something a bit daring, you have to have like a gigantic safety net with all these backups. Yeah. And I think what you've done in your business is, I think you've really taught people you can build that net while you're building
your business. Absolutely. And I think that when you have too much to lose, it's almost scarier. Like if you're comfortable or you're used to having a lot, and I grew up, you know, not having much, but not like thinking I was poor, but just there was just never extra, and I always knew how to make it on my own from a young age because I had waitress and, you know, just make ends meet and live in just like hole in the wall apartments mm-hmm. that I just thought were fabulous. And I was so great, I'm living in San Francisco. But yeah, and then I didn't fear anything after that. I was just like, well, I can always go back to waitressing, mm-hmm. you know.
That's a great way to enter something. Brooks, the way you came to Del Posto, I think you told the story really, really well in your book. And I love the kind of Mad Libs sort of letter you put in the end. Can you tell everyone briefly about how you ended up running the pastry department there?
At Del Posto? Mm-hmm. I had moved to New York and was working at a restaurant on the Upper West Side that was not so great. Which will remain nameless just for a few months. And then I found out Del Posto needed a pastry chef, so I basically decided on the spot that I would get the job. Like I kind of like demanded to get the job. And somehow it worked. I don't know. It's not as cool as quitting your job and opening up a bakery. That's way
no,
more cool.
So. I think that's a good... I've gotten jobs that way where you're just like, I am... You just have to go in knowing you're like, oh, this is my job.
I'm the person for this. Yeah. Convince everyone who might not know that yet.
I mean, I was extremely naive mm-hmm. because I'd only ever worked in kind of like small restaurants.
But that's perfect.
Never like a crazy restaurant in New York. So if I, knowing now what I know, if I knew it back then, there's no way, right. no way I would have been like, nah, forget it.
No, absolutely it's... Ignorance is like can really help you, and that was me
sure,
too.
Sure, sure,
big time.
It absolutely helped.
How for people who might not have been to Del Posto, can you tell everyone how big it is and how many people you're serving? And
it's a very
because it's pretty.
It's a really big restaurant. There's
epic.
There's a lot of seats. there's a lot of like private rooms. Like when new people come in to trail for jobs, I usually describe it to them as kind of like a hotel just with no rooms. just in terms of like the amount of food that we produce every day and the amount of covers that we do. While at the same time, like, you know, doing it at the highest possible level.
Absolutely,
too.
So, yeah.
So that's it, but there's always like an element of kind of like an element of chaos, but it's like a controlled chaos, which, I don't know. I'm kind of like an adrenaline junkie. So mm-hmm.
What's a typical day for you? What time do you get to work?
Yeah, how many days a week do you work, too?
It used to be a lot crazier. I mean, I sort of consider myself always kind of, like, on the clock, you know? Mm-hmm. One of those things, even though it's, like, I don't own the place, but... And it's something that I like to instill in all the cooks and the people that work there is that, you know, if you treat it like it's yours, then... you know, when eventually you do have your own thing, like you've already got that in your heart. So it's kind of like an easy transition, you know, as opposed to just thinking of it like a job.
For sure. No, it gives it so much meaning. And Erin, when you started Baby Cakes, which I guess is almost 10 years ago, is that right?
We're working on 10 years.
Yeah. Just about. It was a single shop on Broome Street. You're now in multiple locations.
Yes.
You also ship nationwide. Mm-hmm. Where do you go to work every day? What's your typical day?
I go to the New York location, mm-hmm. And I still work on top of a bushel of apples in the basement. I tried getting my own office, but it was really isolating, uh-huh. and there's something about... I really need to be in the bakery every day to really see what's going mm-hmm. on and fix things if I see them wrong, because every day there's... It's almost like there's always someone new and someone who doesn't know better yet and things that need to be corrected. And then also I get inspired there. There's, like, a lot of intense energy coming through the bakery and like with the people working there. And yeah, that's what I, so I go there for most of the day and then I go home and work on my bed because I'm 38 weeks pregnant.
Yeah. I mean, I always find that the inspiration for new stuff or anything usually comes when it's, you're not trying to do that. Like yeah. if you set aside some time, like I'm going to come up with this oh, new God. Stuff, it never works. Like
never.
If you're in the middle of like a heated service or something, that's yeah. when you're like, oh, no way, this is going to
yeah,
work.
Yeah, and know, if so. You, like, especially most of my best recipes have been mistakes. Like,
sure,
I'm trying
sure,
to make
sure,
this,
sure.
and then it comes out like that, and I'm like, oh, it's a donut.
It's
I think that's how
the
donuts
that.
Happen. Everyone's like, it tastes like a donut. I'm like, it's a donut.
Like, oh, yeah, yeah. That's so
and then this bread recipe for my next book, I can't remember. I was trying to make bread, and they're like, it tastes like bagels with butter on it. And I'm like, okay, now how do I get that shape down? But yeah, it's definitely like if I were to sit at home trying to make these recipes, I'd just be like, oh, it would take 100 times longer.
I'm sure also being in your shop every day, you're with your customers too.
Yeah.
So I think that
and you see what they like.
Yeah.
Which is just basic stuff. Like everyone likes this, yeah. you know, like the same comforty stuff.
You guys both are essentially in your, whether Aaron for you in your bakeries or Brooks in the pastry department, you guys are kind of, you're running the show in your respective departments. How would you describe your management style? Do you like being a boss?
Do you want to go first? I'll go first. It's changed over the years. I used to be like the cool dad with one earring in his ear, like, yeah, just ask me anything. I'll say, yeah. And then I just realized and just treating employees to like, just extravagant gifts and it just really did not serve me or the company well. It was like almost the more you're like that, the worse things get. So I think that I'm very straightforward and I address things immediately but I think that I give a lot of thank yous. I think people don't hear thank yous a lot, which is really hard. Mm-hmm. But being direct and positive, like I never fault anyone for like not knowing better. I just teach them, like reteach until things look good. And then I'm like, that's great. These are perfect today. Thank you. You know, so and then write-ups are important. I think it's important, I mean, for the health of the entire staff to know if there's one person who's, like, showing up late all the time, that they're going to be held accountable. And, a company that holds its employees accountable for everything is going to run a lot smoother than, you know.
It sort of sends a message. There's, like, a yeah. ripple effect. Yeah.
And I think people feel safer when they know, like, I'm not allowed to be late. That's it. Yeah. Like, I just can't, you know, or I can't act this way or whatever.
What about you, Brooks?
It's definitely been a learning process. Mm-hmm. I think there's a really good quote from Claudia Fleming that I read, and I forget what book it was, but it was something to the effect of, like, you know, I didn't get into making food to manage people.
Mm-hmm.
I got into it because I liked making food. But then usually what happens is eventually at a certain point, like, you have to become a manager because there's,
you
have
need
to
help.
Yeah. You have to have other people doing the stuff. Yeah. You know, so it's not like you're like running a one person operation. So, there are times when it's definitely difficult. We have a really big staff, so making sure everyone is inspired and psyched and happy to be there. But, I really like everyone just to be as happy as possible. Because I have this, I have this theory that, like, you know, happy cooks make delicious food. You know, if you're like ruling with fear and intimidation, like that, mm-hmm. it never works.
Yeah,
and, like,
yeah. It comes through.
There's like a clinical angry quality about it, and I think it
but
comes through.
Some people
through
are
in the food.
Just angry,
right? True, true.
I've tried to make those happy before. Those angry people. Happy.
Yes, and you try and you do everything you possibly can. And sometimes they just stay angry, you know. So.
Yeah.
But the goal is to make, you know, make sure everyone is just inspired and just wants to, you know, wants to be there. Because, I mean, there's all sorts of jobs you could have. that don't involve like cooking usually takes up a lot of time. So, mm-hmm. you know.
And I think there's also an expiration date for people. Like, it's just, you know, as much as people, you know, they'll be excited and into it for X amount of years. And then it's just like, you get bored. It's time to move on. Like, they've passed increasing their inspiration, and it's just time to move on. And I can always see it, and I never fight it. I'm just like, just go. You know, like, it serves you both. Time to go.
Yeah.
Time to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's talk about that moment that you're referring to, like, in that quote from Claudia Fleming, when you get to the point where you go from just making desserts to managing people who are making them. Mm-hmm. Brooks, what was that point for you? Was it when you came into Del Posto, or?
I mean, I'd other restaurants where I'd worked, mm-hmm. I definitely had people working under me, but it was never like, it was always just like one or two or like a half or something, mm-hmm. you know, someone like working part time. So Del Posto was really the first place where I had a really big staff of people. So, that was definitely the point where, yeah, like I was like, oh yeah, I'm actually a manager.
Yeah.
Like I have to make sure that people are happy and psyched. Like I was saying, yeah. So, you know, so.
And Aaron, when did you start letting other people frost the cupcakes?
Oh my God. Well, that was 2 years in. For the first 2 years. Was it 2 years? I think it was first two years, I was the only one who frosted everything. And then it was the end of the holiday season. After 2 years, I was just like, because we were getting so busy and I just could not physically like frost fast enough, like enough cupcakes and then like cakes and all the orders. I would be saying no to orders. So I'm like, I can't
because
do
you can't
it.
Frost them. Yeah.
And well, then finally I let someone frost a cupcake.
And how was
she
that?
Was shaking. Everyone was like, she doesn't let anyone do this. And she's all.
Was she more nervous or you were? Or it was just everyone was?
I think she was more nervous. And then I was ready. And then she frosted it really great. And I was like, oh my God. You know, she just was like freedom to me. I was like, I can have a day off.
Yeah.
I couldn't have a day off because unless we close the bakery. Like, bakery's closed the next Tuesday.
You're letting your like, carpal tunnel relax.
I actually had a really good moment that I just remembered. It was about maybe like 3 weeks into working at Del Posto. A bunch of people called in, or maybe I think like two people called in sick. And at any rate, like it was previous to that, I worked at a tiny restaurant in DC where I just kind of did everything. So some people had called in sick and I was sort of fed up and I was like, you know what? Fine. I'll just do it all myself. So not realizing that it was sort of impossible for me to do it all myself in that situation. So it was total, complete crash and burn scenario one night.
Oh my God.
I refer to it as like the worst night of my life.
Oh yeah. Like, oh my God.
Just like streaming down and I'm,
it's like
and
the like nightmare the, that you have.
Yeah. Like
that
the,
actually comes
like
true.
The I Love Lucy thing where like, the chocolates are just going
everywhere. Oh no.
Yeah. Like there was like ice cream on the ceiling and stuff. And then I think afterwards I just like sort of like sat down on the floor and was like, all right, I can't do this myself.
Yeah,
you know? So.
Oh my God.
My mom says you have to. What is it? You have to break down to break through.
Yes. Sure. Yeah, you have to kind of like hit the bottom and then be like, all right,
I need some help. I want to talk a little bit about the things that you guys are making and you're managing other people as they're making in the development process. Because I think, you both do really different things, but you both specialize in ingredients that aren't necessarily familiar to bakers or especially home bakers. Aaron, you tackled gluten-free vegan baking before. It was cool to do that. Brooks, you incorporate things like celery, eggplant, pecorino, sage in your desserts. What's the development process like for you guys? I know you were talking about like making something and not even realizing it was.
Yeah, that's my MO. I don't know when I'll make anything new next. It's just next time I'm in the kitchen.
Next time
I have something up. I'm very like the way that I. It feels as like I'm blindfolded and I'm just like throwing stuff in bowls and kind of seeing what happens still. But
do you, because as you're making these things or in the past when you've made them, and even if it's not the thing that you intended for it mm-hmm. to be. Are you keeping track of it while you're doing it? Do you write down notes? Do you measure?
I do now. I used to not. And then that was really frustrating because I get it perfect and or I'd make a perfect mm-hmm. mistake and then I'm like, oh God, what did I do? Yeah. And I'll try and scribble down stuff.
Recreating the perfect mistake is a thing.
Title I'm of like, your next
what
book.
Was I? And I just, and I, but I go by the feel of like, I was mixing it this much and I stopped and then I did this. And that's kind of how the chocolate chip cookies were done, was like super experimental and little by little I was chipping away at it every night and like sometimes not making notes and but yeah, so kind of all over the place.
What about you, Brooks? Are you, how long does it take to develop a dish that might go on the menu or in your book?
I mean, we play around, like it's like you were saying, like we play around with stuff like in the middle of service.
Yeah.
That's when you kind of like get your best inspiration. So
yeah, like I wonder like, what will happen if
there's like little lulls here and there where like, you know, you have a bunch of tickets and they stop and then, you know, you pull out some, and a lot of times it just comes from like stuff that you have around. And like then, and Kim and Justine, my sous chefs at Del Posto, who are amazing, who can actually like, at this point they've been with me long enough that they can sort of read my mind. So we work really, really, really well together as a team. So we'll kind of pull out some stuff and just like mix it around. And a lot of times that's how new desserts come about, or like someone will just come in with an idea. Like Kim came in, it was like a few months ago, and she was like, beer, we're going to put beer on a dessert. And I was like, that's not going to work. It's going to be gross, man. And she's like, I'm going to do it. And she did it and crafted this dessert that's been on the menu now for, I think, a couple of weeks. That's completely 100% her thing. Like, I pretty much just like sat back and just like watched her create it, and it's perfect and it's beautiful and it's delicious.
What is it?
It's sort of like it's almost like a Napoleon of candied bread with two different kinds of gelato. One of which is this chocolate and stout sorbet that she figured out. Which sounds kind of weird, but it's totally delicious, and like the maltiness of the beer totally comes through because it's not cooked out, and it works with the bread too because there's that like maltiness there too, and it's just super good.
Like that sounds great. That sounds really good. I think there's something great about in what you both do, that even if you're using things that are unexpected, they're not like so out there. They're not like impossible to appreciate, or you know, Aaron, ingredients that someone might not be familiar with using, you're using them to make things that are really familiar, donuts, chocolate chip cookies, that kind of thing. And Brooks, you manage to make things that are unexpected but don't feel totally like that sounds delicious, even
right.
if
the, yeah the goal is never, I mean, like dessert should be fun, it should be pleasurable, because it's not even really necessary, you know, so it's at the end of a meal, so it's it should feel like comforting and fun. It shouldn't be so weird that it's not delicious.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well said. Serious.
I think on that note, we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to come back and talk about cookbooks and more desserts.
Today's episode of Radio Cherry Bomb is brought to you by Bird, Brooklyn's first fashion destination, leading the fashion pack across the river since 1999. Bird has been voted best women's boutique in New York City by New York Magazine, top visionary boutique in the United States by Lucky Magazine, and has received extensive coverage in the New York Times. Learn more and shop at shopbird.com. That's shopbird.com.
Hi, I'm Reggie Watts, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hi, and welcome back to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm your host, Julia Tertian, and I'm talking with Erin McKenna and Brooks Headley. I want to talk a little bit about role models and mentors. Brooks, you wrote a very, very beautiful essay about your mentor. Is it Laurie Alman Weber?
It's Laurie Weber now.
Laurie Weber, in the third issue of Cherry Bomb, and recently... Jeff Gordner wrote a very great profile of you in the New York Times and said that you view yourself, and I love this, as an Italian grandmother, and that you credit women with teaching you everything you know. Who do you turn to these days when you need support or help with an idea? Or,
I mean, a lot of times, like, I mean, like last night, I got home from work and I hadn't actually flipped through the last course, Claudia Fleming's cookbook, in a while, and for some reason it was just on my stack of things on my desk, you know, and I started flipping through it, and I'm just like, wow, this is part of the reason why I do what I do for a living, you know? So just like getting like re-inspired by like images and recipes and stuff from this book that came out in 2001, that's sort of shamefully like not in print anymore, which I don't understand because it really needs to be, because it's just such an honest like cookbook, and it's about dessert, but and a lot of times like it's just like this real food book, you know. So that definitely like I stayed up until like 3 a.m. looking at that last night. So
you turned to books and
books and also just like I was saying, like my staff, like we really work together as this like kind of collaborative operation.
Yeah, it sounds like the tables have maybe even turned a little bit for you. And when you were describing your sous chef making that beer inspired dessert, I mean,
sure.
I think it's so wonderful that you've created an atmosphere where someone who works under you feels comfortable enough to explore ideas and can get them on the menu.
It's the most exciting thing for me when we can kind of come up with stuff together, or even like my part of it is like even like kind of taken back, because that's the whole point, is to have people inspired, mm-hmm. to like kind of own the situation, you
awesome.
Know, so.
You guys both sound like great people to work for. Easy to say when we're here and not in the kitchen. Erin, what about you? Do you have a particular person or resource that you turn to?
Oh my god, that question made me nervous. Because for inspiration, I'm heavily into meditation, mm-hmm. and I do it every night for about half an hour, and I feel like that's like opens up a lot of space for me. And it's not like I get inspired sitting right there, but I feel like throughout the day I'm like more open and like catching things.
Sounds like you have a good balance if you're kind of at the bakery with tons of people, and then you take that time every day to.
It's like non-negotiables, like working out or something. Like I never want to do it. And it's always like, ugh, because I'm going so fast, and then I just have to sit down. So that's, for me, that's like what really opens things up. And then, honestly, my sisters, I have 7 sisters, and they're, I don't know, they're just there for me morally and to make me laugh and like make me feel comfortable every day. And so I think when I'm comfortable with myself and I'm grounded and open, I think that's just like everything's like wide open and possible.
That's so great. I love that the second book you dedicated to your sisters, right?
Yes.
The first, and how do your brothers feel?
They were in the acknowledgments. They know they're second class citizens. They're always trying to get in on like the girls, and like whenever the sisters get together, they'll try and crash, and we're like, oh, the brothers are, what are they doing here? I mean, totally joking, but like, you know.
Not really.
It's just like, it's like a weird, I feel like we've been together for lifetimes, you know?
Yeah. And
like, so.
That's so sweet. Speaking of someone you both turn to, I think there's a wonderful sort of small world moment in your husband, Chris.
Yes.
I
know that guy.
So Chris helped books.
You probably know him better than me right now.
Chris helped Brooks get Fancy Desserts, your book, which just came out, off the ground. And we were speaking before the show about how he, coming from a magazine background, he really helped you meet every deadline.
Oh, we met every single deadline.
Oh, God.
Every single one.
So horrible to work with. But I can't, like, he's so good.
So it's worth all the pain working with him. It's like, I don't, me and Brooks have never talked about it, but like, to me, it's just like excruciating. He's so on his deadlines and on like sees every single detail, everything that could go wrong and everything that's possible. And he wants both things to be perfect. And, but it always is, you know, he's also very creative and it
sounds like a good dad.
Yeah. No, it definitely worked.
Yeah.
For sure.
Awesome.
For sure.
Speaking of your new book, Fancy Desserts, I wanted to talk a little bit about cookbooks, which is always my favorite topic.
This book is so insane.
Yeah. Brooks's. Yes,
yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing. I've heard so many people describe it as unlike any book out there.
That's right.
And I would both agree with that and disagree, because there is a lot that I think it sort of draws from a lot of categories, but to me it doesn't feel like any cookbook that's out there. And I think you have like amazing essays in it. You had amazing contributors. I love the profiles, including the one of you. And what was, how'd you find the whole process?
How did I find it?
Yeah.
It was awesome. It was great. Like when it finally was finally done, like there was no more changes that could be done, which mm-hmm. actually wasn't really that long ago. And the whole process took a few years, you know, so. And I think actually I talked to you about it once.
Way
before I started, and you described it as this thing, and it totally made sense, was that it's this thing that you're going to have to work on a little bit every single night,
mm-hmm.
like when you get home from work. I remember Aaron, you telling me that, and like, and that's exactly what it was like.
It was this thing that was there every night after you get home from work. You're like, oh, ugh, that book, you know. No, but I remember I was thinking about this the other day, and I'm just so inspired by his book. But it makes sense, because when I talked to you that day, he was so inspired. Like, he was just like, so excited and so clear about his vision. And I always think that when that is there, it's like there's just no way it can't come out right.
I guess it's true of making anything. I mean,
yeah,
especially
it's like
in
that
books, but
inspiration
yeah.
is so important, and that like very clear vision. It everything just kind of like flows from mm-hmm. there.
Yeah. It's sort amazing. Of how you're describing your like meditation practice.
Yeah. Stuff.
Like when you're in the right place and you have your goal in mind, and
yeah, that's
then
why
everything
I feel like
else
it's
will
so
follow.
Important.
Yeah.
Keep that.
And you are working on your third book?
I finished
You finish it. How good does that feel?
I don't have that thing. This one was so hard because it was bread, and I just, I did it because I knew it was what most people were asking mm-hmm. for when they would come into the bakery, and I knew it would be a good book to do. But it was nothing like making cakes and stuff, so it was really, really challenging and really pushed me.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, now I have some of my new favorite recipes in there, like this white bread. I never eat bread because it's like the gluten-free stuff is so, that I've tried, except for the bread basket at Del Posto is the one you made me, but is that off the menu? Oops. Sorry.
No, we always have it. We always
okay,
have it.
Sorry.
You're good.
I'm all that whole spread that you guys made for me. That was really liberating experience. But to have a white bread that's really good, and I toasted it, and I put some of the butter I made for the cookbook with it, and I was like, oh my God, I've done this forever.
Is the title
Bread and Butter. Bread and Butter. Yeah, and it was just like a awesome. Toasted piece of bread mm-hmm. with butter, and like, but yeah, it was really hard. But really rewarding, and I don't know. I'm excited for it.
Yeah, I've already decided I'm going to rip off some recipes.
Go
just
ahead.
So you know.
Brooks just takes them and makes them better, so I'm like...
No.
Why not? When is it?
I'm more
when's
sloppy.
It coming out?
It's March 17th.
Of
2015.
Okay, so a few months.
Yeah.
It's a friend of mine recently asked me, she was like, which gluten-free bread baking book do you most recommend? And I was like, it's not out yet. I was like, it's on its way. I was like, but it's going to be the Bible.
It's easy because it's like making cake batter. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is kind of like making cakes because all it is, you're just making like a batter and then put it in a pan and then put it in
Because traditional bread baking is all about gluten development.
Oh yeah, and I just
and
that
whole
is
other,
I'm so clumsy. It's yeah. just like I would never be able to do that. So it's like super.
So they're all sort of loaf pan.
Oh, just super. Yeah, straightforward, okay. easy.
Awesome.
Like, making cake and then putting it in the oven.
Very cool. I think for both of you, your books are sort of similar to the work you do, whether in the bakery or in the Del Posto kitchen, because I think you've both taken this really familiar medium of books and made it your own. And I'm really looking forward to it. I think both of your first two books, Erin, you have such a personal and often like a very, very funny voice, and I just love reading them. And I think you've also made gluten-free vegan baking like so accessible.
Right. And you know what's really funny? Like, I don't know if you remember this, but my mom wrote you a fan letter.
Yeah, I was thinking about it today. I have it in my file.
I had no idea that I knew Erin, and she had just, her doctor was like, you know, you got to stop eating gluten. So, like, my mom just had been baking her whole life. So I guess she went to the store.
Yeah.
Went to the bookstore and she got your book, and loved it so much that she wrote you a fan letter. Not knowing that we knew each other, which is so awesome, you know. So
I didn't know. I thought that she knew, I still have it in my file. It was like the best letter ever.
So sweet.
I think I think she bought maybe like 5 or 6 copies too, and just like gave it to all her friends. Like, yeah,
we have to get her
super awesome.
We have to get her a little sweater or something. what's next for baby cakes? An actual baby?
Oh yeah, we'll have one of those coming. But big news coming in Disney World in Florida. I can't really say exactly what yet, but big developments there. And then I'm really focused on, I really want to go to San Francisco. I've tried, I've had 3 leases in my hand, and they've all, like, something blew up, or like literally the craziest things happen where I'm like, okay, is the, you know, like, should I step back and get into hippie mode and be like, is the universe trying to tell me something? Like, I've had these great places given to me. I want a San Francisco spot, or maybe another New York place.
That'd be cool.
But
if you could be in any other neighborhood in New York, like real estate prices not being an issue or anything like that, where would you go?
Next to Bleecker Park. In the West Village. It's where we are apartment. All the time.
That would be,
I think, the West Village. I think so.
You could stop commuting cross town.
Yeah.
That would be great. Brooks, what about you? What's next? Veggie burgers?
I'm trying. There's a space next door I've been like harassing him to get into.
Brooks makes the most incredible veggie burgers, which are getting
he
a lot
has
of
his pot of
love
pot
right
of gold
now.
He's hidden on.
Yeah,
all I've, you would have to do it would okay I'm not gonna stop trying to convince
I
him.
I need advice.
Just do one thing on the menu and you would just only have to, I started with 3 recipes, I opened the bakery with 3 recipes, so you could just do one burger.
Well, no, I have 2.
Well, you just do 2 burgers.
I've got the regular one, which is vegetarian. I've got a vegan one. And then I've got a gluten-free one. So I've got all the bases covered.
See,
so.
Everyone can enjoy
stop
themselves.
I've eaten a lot of veggie burgers. So I feel that I'm the most qualified to make veggie burgers.
Yeah,
so.
It's a texture thing and texture and flavor. And
it's like gluten-free bread bacon. Sort of same conversation.
Yeah.
Before we go, I have to do the Radio Cherry Bomb rapid fire Q&A
okay.
with both of you. So no pressure.
No, I'm good
no
at
worries.
These.
Okay, good. I had no doubts. So 7 questions I ask every guest. So we'll take 1 question at a time. And maybe Erin will start with
you.
Sweet or salty?
Sweet.
Brooks?
Salty.
You guys are a good pair. Erin, what did you have for breakfast today?
I had eggs.
Eggs?
I'm not vegan.
this green tea.
Which you just finished,
I don't think I never eat breakfast.
So. Never?
That's bad, right?
I guess it depends
normal
on when
for
your
men.
Day starts. Yeah. There's no, whatever, if it works for you. Erin, if I were to look into your refrigerator at home right now, what might I be surprised to find?
Beside eggs. It's empty.
It's empty. It's a busy moment for you guys. Brooks, what about you?
I think you would just laugh because it's so small, and there's a bottle of soy sauce and a bottle of champagne, neither of which I will ever use.
So. Yeah, I know. I have like 5 bottles of nice champagne that I've just been sitting there for years.
next hurricane. The power goes out. What's your go-to snack?
But I am eating all day, so it's like kale chips.
Kale chips?
Still.
It's all right. That's great. What about you?
On the Asahi line at Del Posto, mm-hmm. they do it's like a puffed rice pasta. So it's rice pasta that's overcooked, dehydrated, and then deep fried. So it's like,
oh my god,
crunchy rice pasta.
So it's like a rice cake.
Crispy. It's like a it's like Cheetos or something. Ah. But I actually eat so many of them that they have to hide them from me and just.
That's a high.
Sometimes
snack.
Like if it's like a new cook, they're kind of like why is this guy eating all my stuff, man?
He's eating all my prep.
I like the Del Posto snack. Aaron, what's your favorite time of day?
Oh, 7 p.m. That's when I meditate.
Is that the meditation time? Yeah.
And then I eat a bunch of ice cream and watch shows. It's like an obscene amount. Chris is always like, what the hell?
What kind of ice cream?
I really like, who is it? Oh, my God. That's the Dairy-Free Maven. Everyone needs to work on their names. There's like a chocolate. Oh my god, no wait, I have to say it. It's the it's just raw vegan ice cream called the Cookie Jar or something. Mm-hmm. They have it's so good. It's way better than any other, and it's like coconut milk, which you can't really taste.
Really? I've never had that one.
They have it at the health food store on 7th Avenue and 13th Street called
Elm
Health. Yeah. It's really good.
Good
it's
to
the
know.
Salted caramel one's good.
Brooks, what's your favorite time of day?
Like 11:45 p.m. I don't know. That's just
is
like
that when work is over?
No, that's a lot of times it's still going on.
Wow.
But that's like it's still not the next day.
Yeah.
You know.
Borderline.
Yeah.
Aaron, where do you want to travel to next? San Francisco.
That's a hard one. I hate traveling.
Could stay at home. That could be your.
I would say San Francisco. I had a fun time the last time.
Cool. And what about you, Brooks?
Sicily. I've never been there.
Mm. Last question, Erin. What was your favorite meal when you were a kid?
Oh, grilled tuna melt.
Mm, delicious. Vegan and gluten free.
Vegan and gluten free. Good fats.
Brooks, what about you?
Like baked macaroni and cheese, like where it's not like creamy at all, like where the cheese kind of like it's just like
coagulates.
This, yeah, you cut it out as like a big block or whatever. Like my grandmother would make it. And
are you a middle slice or a corner slice or edge?
Like I would eat the whole pan awesome. Like lots and lots and lots of black pepper on it too.
What was your favorite meal?
What was my favorite meal as a kid? I've never been asked.
See, it's hard.
I would say my immediate first thing is my babysitter Jenny, who I'm still very close to, is from St. Vincent, and she made this thing called chicken pilau all the time, which is like essentially St. Vincent's version of chicken and rice. And that was really good. And she would make that for herself and then like put it aside and then make me and my brother something else. But I always ate like both dinners. I wanted them all. But, like,
that one.
That was my favorite. Thank you for asking. Erin and Brooks, thank you so much for coming on the show today. All things baby cakes, including information about locations, menus, also the most fun videos in the world. Aww. It's all at babycakesnyc.com. And the Twitter and Instagram handles are the same, babycakesnyc. Then there's separate ones.
Everything, even Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, it's all babycakesnyc.
Okay, awesome. And Brooks, your Instagram and Twitter handle for you is at Working Pastry.
Nope.
And everything about Del Posto, where you end every single meal, is at delposto.com. I'd also like to add that the prefix lunch at Del Posto, I think, is like one of the greatest deals
in
New York. Yeah.
It's insane.
What is the deal?
It's $40 for three courses.
What?
It's the exact same food as dinner.
Yeah. It's pretty...
and you get like a...
I just spent that on lunch at some place I won't name. That's a juice place. It wasn't enough food, and I had to keep buying things.
There's a guy playing piano. There's a purse stool.
No, it's pretty. It's for $40.
Come on.
I think eating at Del Posto is an amazing experience, but maybe not the most easy thing to do for everyone. And I think lunch is a really great option, and you can try all of Brooks's amazing creations. So I just wanted to plug that. As always, thank you, everyone, for listening. Tune in next Monday at 1 o'clock for another episode of Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.